With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
It is Tour Live. I am Neil Atkinson. I've got Mike Bancall. I've got Dan Morgan. I've got Steve Evans all in front of me here. If you're worried about my pallor, if you're worried about the way in which I look, I am in the Flamingo Room. From there, you can see that is what the wallpaper is opposite me, and it is absolutely bouncing all over my face. If you're listening to this as a podcast, well, firstly, you're fortunate you're not having to see the flamingos bounce on my face. But also, you're going to get Gary Judge talking about the Blues coming up in a minute or two, and Mel Lawley and Missy Bokerns talking to Harriet Pryor about the big game coming up at the weekend for Liverpool women. But before then, we will chat about the press conferences, because they are now plural these days, given everything that's going on. And we will work in part four to talk about the Merseyside derby as well. But I want to start off with the concept of the press conferences. And Dan Morgan, it seems to me as though the Manchester City manager is back on his tightrope of looking a bit of a divvy if he isn't too careful in the long run. But I actually feel a little bit sorry for him, because he's the fella who has to be put up to speak about this stuff all the time. And we're creating a circumstance here where there's football managers. I noticed Dyche got asked about a Super League and got asked about Manchester City. Emery got asked about Manchester City in a Super League. We're putting football managers out there to answer questions that don't actually pertain to what happens on the grass. So while Guardiola should do a damn sight better job of answering his questions, I still just feel a little bit like, well, is there any chance of Manchester City putting up someone else for this sort of stuff, please, who can actually answer them in full if we're going to have to go through this charade?
Yeah, I think we can all recount back to that Leeds game in the lockdown season, can't we, whereby Jurgen Klopp became the face of Liverpool's participation in the Super League, and you know, not only had to field questions on that whilst preparing the pool for the game, but also had to deal with things like Leeds putting T-shirts in dressing rooms and expecting...
chasing the coach and all that nonsense.
Yeah, all that nonsense. So I fully take that point. I think it's a good point. I mean, I think it's been interesting how much Vincent Kompany, for example, has had to say on the matter. Not himself having to comment on it, but just literally being in a position where he's had to have a say on the matter, because he now works as a manager in English football. So, you know, circumstance has a little bit to do with it in terms of certain people. With regards to Guardiola, I don't think he ever covers himself in any glory when it comes to stuff like this. I think that there is some mitigation and some ways in which you can feel for him. But I think he very much leads the why always us charge. You know, the we are very surprised that this is an investigation that's, you know, currently into Manchester City line. And you know, I think I've written a piece today for the Anfield Wrap, and one of the things I've cited in it is, you know, the selfie he takes with his staff on the day that the UEFA ban gets rescinded, and he takes a selfie in front of a Sky Sports news screen with all of his staff, like it's a trophy parade. And you know, just the lack of awareness around something like that is one thing in itself, but you know, the fact that anyone could see something like that as any way, shape or form of victory for football, and someone so invested in football and someone so in the game as him, just doesn't make any sense to me. And whilst I'll always have sympathy for the managers being the mouthpieces on things that they don't really know, or well, they probably know a lot more than you or I, but don't really have an opinion they want to share on in front of the public, there's still some ways in which Guardiola, I think, can conduct himself better.
Can conduct himself better, Steve. For me, this whole situation feels almost like a little bit wider. It feels to me like there's football, if it's not careful, yet again, but is perhaps still in the midst of a pretty long ongoing crisis point. And I've written a couple of things this week about how it's unremittingly bleak at the moment. The Manchester City stuff I've just found really miserable. And there's loads of reasons why. I've obviously got, you know, we've got to be clear about this. We've all got dogs in the fight. We've all got skin in the game supporting Liverpool. But it's what you never want. What never wanted to have happen anyway. I don't want to relitigate league titles from literally 9 years ago now. You know, it was 9 years today. This week, Liverpool put five past Arsenal in the 5-1, which made me feel a bit old. It made me feel a bit happy. I was made up. I was there, but I don't want to be relitigating this stuff. Similarly, you know, the idea of the A22 stuff around the Super League coming back in, the fact that it reminds you that UEFA are a terrible set of lads as well. You know, the whole thing just feels to me, if we're not careful, like we are hitting a bit of a crisis point. And my other concern with that is, are we just turning into old men? I don't think it was better than the old days, far from it. I don't think it was better 9 years or 9 years ago. And that's part of the problem. It was crap 9 years ago and no one was doing anything about it.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, we probably all knew less back then as well. There was probably less information out there, you know, on what was going on, which probably helped the matters. Now you've got things like the 65,000 news channels on Twitter all reporting different things, and Twitter's such a lovely place at the moment as well, as we all know. So it's a pretty bleak outlook. The Man City thing for me, it feels a bit, as you say, we've all got skin in this game more than most, really. So it does feel a bit personal, this one, you know, and it does feel a bit, I could be a bit cheated, really. You know, we've had three occasions we've been sat in Anfield on the last day of the season, and, you know, we've lost the league title to them on the last day of the season, you know, last year being the one that hurt the most, really. And I know, you know, the charges don't sort of apply to last season, but still, you know, they still got to where they are by cooking the books over a certain amount of time. So it just feels like football's a spinning out of control at the moment. So the Super League thing is just wild. I think it's been pushed from obviously the two Spanish sides. You see the Premier League as already being a bit of a Super League, as others have said today. The money in the Premier League is ridiculous, and the Spanish clubs aren't happy. You've obviously Juventus, who've been caught out many times, and you know, just they're praying for it comes to fruition as well, the Super League. But for me, it's important that everyone just keeps their heads a little bit, and hopefully the right things come about from this investigation. But it's just going to be a matter of time, and whether the Premier League can stick to the guns and have the balls to do so.
Exactly. But I mean, let's be clear about this. You know, there's something in there in the comments as well, and I just want to be quite clear, obviously, that nothing here has been demonstrated finally at this point. Nothing is proven. The investigation isn't over, but the next phase of it has begun, and we get to see where the allegations are. Steve started off there, Mike. He was critical of Twitter. He's obviously not been on one of Cop and Fracas spaces. Absolutely wonderful things, full of kindness, full of generosity of spirit. You've been on them. That's an area where football at least isn't in crisis, but the A22 Super League stuff, as he says, for me, what's interesting going through it, reading it, and if people haven't read it, that's completely understandable. We haven't got time to read PDFs from Mad Venture Capitalists. But for me, it's a document that's positioning itself to try to exist without Premier League involvement, and possibly to an extent exist in opposition to Premier League involvement. And if the Premier League is going to end up being so dominant, it is likely that other leagues and clubs in other leagues are going to look to group together to gang up on it.
Yeah, I think the European Super League does expose this big tension that exists in football between the other top five European leagues and the Premier League. And I think a lot of the big teams in those top five leagues feel threatened by the financial might and power of the Premier League. You know, that's just true. And we now know, based on sort of regulations that were put into place after the initial European Super League was announced, that it will be very difficult for Premier League teams to join a new European Super League. And there is still, like, I think Miguel Delaney's been really brilliant on this sort of stuff. He wrote that around 50 clubs are still interested in joining a European Super League. None of them are Premier League clubs. So that says there is an appetite, and there is this agitation and this tension between these top five leagues and the Premier League. And I wonder how that ends, because, you know, the Premier League's not going to slow down anytime soon. We're talking about possibly Qatar buying Manchester United, you know, Saudi Arabia own Newcastle at the moment. You know, this is only going to get worse. This tension is only going to grow and grow and grow as we see more money being pumped into the Premier League, and these kind of, even in the mid-table, these sides are getting more powerful. A team like Brighton now, for example, some of the players they can sign, some of the players they have at their disposal. This is something that we haven't seen this before. Like, Brighton have a World Cup winner. They have Matoma. They have Lamptey. These really top players who 10 years ago would have only been players in the top four teams in this country. So that there is this does pose a threat to those other top five leagues in terms of the quality of players we can attract in this league, and the fact that the middle class are doing so well as well. And I wonder where attention ends.
Yeah, just a comment there. The Wolfman's got gonads. Don't think he was christened that. Says playing Madrid multiple times a season would be dull. Let me introduce you to Molineux and Wolverhampton Wanderers. at this difficult time, let me introduce you to Wolverhampton Wanderers. Ruben Neves there. Feel as though he lives in ours. There is in amongst all of this, Dan, we do end up getting ourselves just, as I say, I don't want to seem like it's all remarkably bleak. But for me, maybe a better way to frame it is it all just feels remarkably significant. And that is the difference. And listen, things were more significant in 2008 when Manchester City were taken over. Things have been more significant at different periods, I'd argue. You know, more significance would have helped. Again, Ant, Dicko, even and lads will be bored and playing Madrid every other week. Let me introduce you to Brighton, Ant. There is a thing here where I'm just sick of the significance of everything. And I want to get back to, you know, football is, to quote the wonderful Gianluca Vialli, you know, football isn't war, it's a game you play with your mates. Football shouldn't be geopolitics. It's a game you play with your mates. And it feels like this, everything has this endless weighty significance on it week after week, press release after press release. And I think everyone just needs a bit of a break from it.
But this has been football's trajectory for 30 years. This has been the Premier League's making. It's been UEFA's making. You know, you talked about the original Super League before. The worst thing to come out of that, rather than this proposal, was that, you know, everyone made UEFA the arbiters of good faith.
Yeah, they're great, yeah, them, aren't they?
Yeah. Thank God we got them. It's like, what? You know, really? Is that where we are now? But, you know, this has been football's doing, its own doing. You know, it's eating itself. And I think, you know, again, if we're looking more, you know, at the macro with this, one of the things I think is we've got to change. As base level, and as much as this isn't on people who attend football matches and are invested in football at the very ground level, we have to change attitudes, because our attitude is, you know, this is the only way to win. The race to the bottom is the only way to win. You know, you get rich or you die trying, to quote a very famous album. But, you know, it's that concept of the only way to win is to be bankrolled. And we then aspire to that rather than oppose it. And it's about how you get that. It's about how you attain it. It's about how you champion. And in no other, you know, I say this all the time, in no other walk of life would you champion any person being paid £500,000 a week other than in this environment. And we are all made to look divvies from it on a regular basis because we're all hypocrites, and I get it. But rather than shout from the rooftops and, you know, be slightly hypocritical, as we all are, I think we've all got a responsibility to play in this, in terms of how we view football and how we view how you are successful in football and what constitutes success and how you attain it, because that's all to do with all of this. You know, and it is, you know, you've used the word bleak a few times this week, and it's bleak because there's no one really taking responsibility for this. There's no one really grabbing it and saying, well, this is the pathway out of this. This is the pathway to this least resistance. This is how we fix this. So,
I want to talk about our manager on this briefly, Steve. This goes back to, I mean, what sort of occurred to me today is, and I think pound for pound, over the course of a year, the Liverpool manager faces more questions from journalists than the Prime Minister. Like, genuinely faces more questions from journalists than the Prime Minister when you begin to sort of rethink this and move along it. Today he shut down any chatter about the Manchester City stuff. Previous week he talked a little, well, he made a joke about the Chelsea thing, about needing his lawyer. Mm-hmm. He gets himself het up, it's fair to say, in the immediate aftermath of the Wolves game. He's, you know, he's kicking off, unhappy about, it looks as though, you know, certain bits and pieces that are being written without any names being attributed at times. It feels as though that's the case as to what's getting to him. But my point here is, again, these fellas, just to go back, end up where I started, you know, these fellas, it's back to my thing about everything feels too significant. All of them, and I'll, you know, this is even where I'll go to bat for Guardiola. Where's Guardiola happiest? Almost certainly when he's training the players, because that's what he loves, that's what he's got into this for, that's what he wants to do. He wants to play the best possible football. He wants the best possible footballers to do it. That's when he's happiest. He doesn't want to be sat in front of cameras answering a ton of questions. Our fella doesn't want to be doing it either. And it is mad to think that pound for pound, our managers, the managers, answer more questions from the press than the fucking cabinet.
Definitely. It's a part of the game that's changed so much over the past sort of 10 years, really. If you look at just how much the media requirements of a manager, you know, do you have especially if you're a manager playing a lot of cup games as well as that. Like, look how many games you played last year. I mean, you can tell Jürgen doesn't enjoy the press conferences. So I have to do 60 odd in a year.
Well, 60 pre, and then he's got to do post.
Exactly, yeah. We're driving fucking bananas. And you know, and he gets prickly. We know he does that. And so people will prod him with a stick because you know he will get a reaction. And you know it's gonna get clicked, you know it's gonna sell papers, you know it's gonna drive sort of, you know, drive exposure. It's something, as I said, you know, that just it's such a massive part of the game now. And it's if you're an emotional guy and you're out there to be shot at when
you want your football managers to be emotional as well, don't you want them to feel it. That's what we want.
But you can't win, can't he? If he's emotional at the press conference, he gets shot down. He gets called a gobshite or whatever. He can't be saying that. I mean, if he's just a robot sitting there like motionless, deadpan, you'd be like, oh Christ, this fella's born life out me here. So you can't win either way, really. You know, the requirements, as I say. He must feel like he does a press conference every other day since he's been here for the last 6 years. It must drive him bananas. And the questions he gets asked about everything going on in the world, there's something mad in the world. It's not about football. It's about this. It's about that. And he has to give an answer. And it's scrutinised down to the finest tee. So it must drive him insane. It certainly will drive me insane. I know that.
Mike, he wants to. It's interesting that I think he's in very much protection mode at the moment, around a fair few, close to him and his team. In the squad as well. I'm intrigued by it. I think he's clearly been implacably furious with his footballers. Implacably furious. We get to see it on the sidelines. He's crystal clear. You know, I like the idea that he went so mad at them after Wolves, he felt he had to give them 2 days off so everyone didn't have to look at everyone else for a couple of days, which is a level of going mad at people that I've I was that livid. I was that livid. I had to give them a day off.
I can't look at your face anymore. Get out of my sight.
I think it's quite something. But I'm very taken with this, you know, this feeling that he wants to protect as much as possible, because he just doesn't want people being, you know, he wants to take responsibility. This is the thing that I'm sort of taking away from the last couple. He wants him to be responsible. He doesn't want finger pointing elsewhere.
He doesn't, and I think Jordan Henderson's the case study in this press conference, where I think he's asked a question about him and he immediately just defends Jordan and just says, look, you know, I'm not answering questions. We don't need to ask questions about Jordan Henderson. And I think that's Jurgen Klopp. Jurgen Klopp is someone who defends his players. He's not
for better or worse, Mike. I hasten to add, for better or worse.
You know, there are times when perhaps he should just, you know, have a go and just cut loose and just tell them they were all rubbish and Matip, what the hell were you doing for 15 minutes there? And maybe he should, but this is who he is. This is the price of doing business with Jurgen Klopp. He is a man who will defend his players to the very hilt. He's never thrown his players under the bus. You know, in press conferences as well, they are a performance more than anything, and the level of scrutiny he faces and his players face, I think he's just very cautious of that. And he acknowledges that, look, I can make headlines by saying something even tangentially close to criticism of this player. So I'm going to stay clear from any of that and just defend my players. And I think at the moment, they probably need that. I mean, as low as they ever have been under this manager, you know, players like Jordan Henderson, even someone like Van Dijk hasn't performed to the level you'd expect this season. Look, so many of our trusted... and his trusted lieutenants haven't performed to the level that they should have performed this season or expected to perform this season. And I think he just wants to defend them. You know, they're at low moments. And I think having a manager back them in the press, no matter what, and fronting up all criticism, that might help them. That might help them kind of get that second wind they need between now and May. But this is
now Klopp on Monday, really. Mike. Now on Monday. Let's not mess about. Let's not have another May chat. Monday. All right, listen, that has been part one of your tour live this week. Just a couple of little bits and pieces. We'll do it either side of what's coming up in a second or two. You've got Harry Pryor talking to Mel Lawley and Missy Bow. I'm talking to Gary Judge about the Blues with reference to Monday. But just before then, on Monday, Spine Cop are putting a lot of flags out there as part of getting the atmosphere going as much as we can, getting behind the side and reminding them exactly what they are and what they've achieved recently. So Paddy, you'll have heard on a lot of Anfield Rap stuff, messaged me today and said, can you please ask people to come over to us in the corner of the cop underneath the scoreboard any time really before kickoff? There'll be plenty of flags, all different sizes to wave, and we want to encourage as many people to get involved as possible. Try it out for this one. If you've been thinking about it, everyone's so welcome and everyone should come and be part of it. It'll be a good Monday night one all the way through there. So if you want to get down to the corner of the cop underneath the scoreboards, if you're in the cop stand pre-match, give everyone a hand, meet some people. And it's a practice run, this one, as well, for Real Madrid. Let's be crystal clear about this one. I'm not acting as though the Merseyside derby is the be-all and end-all. There's massive European nights, if Mike Bankhole is right, massive European nights to come from a Liverpool point of view. That has been part one of of your tour live this week coming up now. It's me with Gary Judge. Then it's Harriet with Mel Lawley and with Missy Bokens. Joined by Gary Judge to talk about Everton. Resurgent after a win against Arsenal last weekend. It is only one win, though. The manager says today, Sean Dyche, you know, he's been around football long enough to know that just because you've won one game means that you've never won the next one. And also, Gary, the way in which it ends up going, I mean, genuinely, you could have done with the Reds doing you a favour, let alone anything else there. What with us getting walloped by Wolves not long thereafter, Leeds have got themselves a point in the meantime. I don't think there's any illusions, is there, amongst the Everton faithful, where the club currently is, on and off the pitch, just dealing with on the pitch first and foremost. I really didn't get the impression that the Blues felt like, oh, it's one win and it's all going to be all right now. I've actually got the impression around Evertonian media, speaking to the occasional Evertonian this week, the attitude is more like, that's just one step up a big mountain. And I think that's probably a better attitude in general.
100%, mate. Couldn't agree more. And we've been, most Evertonians have been very much talking it down. It was a relief at the weekend that there is a, you know, there are some shreds of light and that there is some hope there, because, you know, 2 weeks ago, you know, a lot of Evertonians are just dead and buried, given that we, particularly after the transfer window closed, were spending no money. But yet it gave us a glimmer of hope, I think, last weekend. It showed that some of the players in that squad have got a little bit more about them than we maybe thought. And it showed that we've got maybe a few dimensions to our game that we haven't shown over the last few months. But yeah, that's all it is. It's a start, and it gave us hope.
It's the main thing about it was, you know, when I was watching it, was how much it looked like a Burnley team. And I don't mean that as criticism. You know, there's a Burnley team that finished seventh. There's a Burnley team that finished seventh. And I thought they played really interesting football. There's a Burnley team that finished 10th. You know, it isn't the idea here that when I say a Burnley team, I mean it's clogging football. Far from it. You know, Everton create the better chances in the game. But it's more the idea that they pick the moments when they're going to come out. So they don't sit deep all game. They sit deep when it suits them to sit deep, but when they can press and push and be compact and squeeze, they do that. You know, that to me is a Burnley side that's functioning, going back to the Dyche era there. That's what a Burnley team would do. It'd pick its moments, it'd get up the pitch, and it'd know that it could create opportunities. And I thought all of that was on show. If there was a thing to get behind, it was that all of that looked like it was on show, and that's only game one.
Yeah, and let's not forget, there are enough players there in that team that are experienced and have played in those types of systems and teams. You know, your Tarkowski's obviously under Dyche. You've got Seamus Coleman, who's playing under David Moyes and Carlo Ancelotti, amongst other players in the squad. You've got Decore, who's played in an half-decent squad at Watford, or a half-decent team there. You know, there are players, and Ghana Guy is plays at the very highest level. So there are players who are more than capable of fitting into that type of system and playing that type of way. And as you say, picking the moments.
With the stuff that's going on off the pitch, you know, I feel as though there's an energy around the Blues at the minute. Not to let that dissipate. I don't think this is going to be one of those where Everton, again, even if they dig themselves out of bother between now and the end of the season, I feel as though there is a genuine, absolute desire for there to be a really quite deep sea change. I don't quite see any sort of way back for the existing regime at this point. But they are still there. And that is something which, you know, is going to need to be worked through over a period of time. It'll only take a few bad results for that to become even more vocal, but I even don't think any number of good results change that now.
No, you're right. I don't think any of the on the field matters deflect from the poor work that's gone on behind the scenes. And I think the general attitude from the fans throughout this period has been, look, whenever the players set foot on the pitch, we support the players, we support the manager. That's our priority, that's our role. In this particular situation, I think there's a time and a place for those protests and a time and a place to put the focus back on the board. But whilst the team and the players and the manager need us, that's our job, really.
Last little thing then is sort of looking across, you know, is there a sense that this is a good time to play Liverpool? Is there a sense that this is a bad time to play Liverpool? You know, I'm very, very conscious, obviously, where we've currently been in our run of form. What's the Evertonian feeling in this at this time? Is this as good a chance as we're going to get to win at Anfield, or is it instead, listen, you know, it's turning up to Anfield in front of a crowd, we haven't won there for a long time. What's the general feeling around that?
I don't think any Evertonian can honestly say that they think it's a bad time to play Liverpool. Absolutely not. I don't think you could say that. You know, I'm going to say that, and you know, I've said it to enough Evertonians that it doesn't mean that we're certainly going to go there and we're guaranteed to get a result. Far from it. We've got enough PTSD from previous moments, games, situations at Anfield where we think things are going our way. You know, the Divock Origi one in particular, where Pickford drops the ball and whatever. There's been so many games where the game swung. And somewhere it's always found its way, you know, into Liverpool's hands. And unfortunately, the only time that we've got a convincing result at Anfield in memory, lifelong memory, I suppose, is when we had, you know, the likes of James Rodriguez and Richarlison, what you would call, you know, world or at least European top class forwards who can open up a defence. We haven't got them at the moment. So, you know, there's nothing really that indicates that this game's going to be a walkover. But you look at the Achilles heels of the Liverpool defence and midfield, and that's where we can actually have some joy. So that I don't think any Evertonian will say that this is not a game we can win. But also, it's certainly far from a walkover.
absolutely. Give me a prediction, Gary.
I've said 1-1. To be honest, it's a very typical derby result for me. If you look back through the last 20 years, I think there's been 89 1-1s and certainly more than that in terms of draws. A draw would be a fantastic result for us. I think we'll get some joy from set pieces. I think that'll be the game plan. Get as many set plays as we can. Get the ball into them channels and win corners and win free kicks. And for that reason, I think, and given the fragility of your defence, I think we will get some joy. The far post seems to be the areas of the pitch that Dyche likes to attack, and obviously Trent struggles in a lot of defensive situations. So I do think we'll score. I think we have to score first. I think if Liverpool do score first, I think the game gets away from us. And I think generally, even though this Liverpool team has not been as strong as, you know, this season has been in recent seasons, the Wolves game aside, when you take the lead, you generally do win games. So I think we've got to score first. And I think if we do score first, it'll probably be let's hang on and stay in the game and make it difficult. But I can't see our defence not wilting at some point. And I think he'll have enough to at least unlock us once.
Okay, thank you very much to Gary. You'll have heard Gary across the Anfield Rap stuff, doing stuff around Access Sport College. We're obviously at the Anfield Rap delighted to partner with Access Sport College, a national sport training provider focused on giving students the best possible opportunities to achieve a future in the sports industry. And they're partnering with a range of professional clubs and academies, and Access Sport are proud to power the renowned Severn Elite Academy further education programme for students aged 16 to 19 in and around the Liverpool area. Off the pitch, the programme focuses on student pathways, combining practical learning with professional analysis, technology and industry experiences, perfect for those exploring careers within sports science, coaching, teaching or transferable skills into other industries such as the public sector. But students can also gain a qualification equivalent to 3A levels, which provides progression to university, US scholarships, apprenticeships and direct employment. There's been numerous successful alumni moving into higher education, apprenticeships or employment, and a range of careers across the sporting pyramid, including roles at Liverpool and on the pitch. Players are supported in the development of their overall skills, technique and athleticism, training every day alongside their education and playing in competitive leagues with elite player opportunities to represent the partner club AFC Liverpool. Being a global academy across three continents, students have the opportunity to travel to the US to represent Severn Elite Academy at international competitions and gain invaluable coaching experience and skills. For more information on the Severn Elite Academy further education program powered by Access Sport, if you can go to Access Sport, it's three S's in the middle. I know it looks strange. accesssport.ac.uk/TAW to register your interest, and you'll receive an invite to the next open event taking place on the 24th of February. And that's for anyone you know, any families you know with people who will qualify between the right age range, anyone you know who would be interested in that, do pass that along. It's accesssport.ac.uk/TAW for that. We'll now move ourselves over and we'll have Harriet Pryor speaking to Mel Lawley and to Missy Bo-Kearns.
We've got Mel Lawley with us now. Thank you for joining us. Let's reflect first of all on the weekend, a really positive result for you. Did you feel like that was a big step in the right direction after a few difficult games and results?
Yeah, like you said, we've had a few difficult games. So Sunday was a massive win for us and a massive boost for us to go into the game against Leicester. So we've got to take the performance that we've done against Reading into the Leicester game and hopefully get the 3 points.
When you have difficult results, what do you all sort of say to each other afterwards, and how do you pick each other back up? Because it seems like as a squad you're all really close and you manage to just pick each other up really quickly, but how does that go, especially with the manager as well?
I think, look, when we reflect back on the games, we focus more on the positives. So we take the positives into the next game and work on the negatives. But mainly we focus on the positives and just keep pushing each other through. But getting back on the pitch, working hard, and, yeah, just focusing on the next game.
So you were at Manchester City before. You had a couple of years, obviously, in the Championship. What's the standard of the WSL? How's it changed and how's it got better since you were sort of last playing in it?
I think now every game that you go into is a massive competition, so every team that you play against, you know, there's going to be a battle and you've got to be on your A game. So yeah, the competitions and the league's got massive and it's just more competition, yeah.
And the fans as well, you've got probably more of them than ever before coming and seeing you every week. How is that, having their support?
Yeah, obviously the Reds fans are a huge support for us, and every game that we go to we can hear them, and just thankful for them to be there and just pushing us on.
It's nice to hear them singing your name as well. They've got a few songs to you, haven't they?
Do you know what, I actually don't even know the songs, but obviously I always hear Lawley, so it's obviously when I hear that I'm like, right, I gotta push my game and just do better for myself but also for them.
Yeah, nice. And there's a lot of younger fans as well, isn't there? And I think that must be really nice because you can see how you're inspiring the next generation. But how is it to be part of this sort of huge growth of women's football? Because for you guys inside it, do you sort of notice it and do you pay attention to it, or do you just get on with what you're doing?
I think as a youngster when I was growing up, there wasn't that many role models to look up to. But now looking at the game, looking at our team, Liverpool, myself, inspiring the next generation, and it's rewarding for me, but obviously it's rewarding for them. And after every game they're always there smiling, wanting autographs, and it's a pleasure to go and have photos and say hello.
You're at the halfway point of the season now, and I was just speaking to Missy Bo about the new faces that you've got in through the door, obviously some players returning who have been here before. How has that changed things and lifted things as well?
I think them coming in is a massive impact for us, and it's a positive one. Every training session it's fighting for the shirt, but also pushing each other to be better each training and working really hard. But yeah, the signings that we've brought in, obviously you've seen on Sunday, they're a massive impact for us, and it's a pleasure to have them. For myself as well, they're pushing me every day to be better, and hopefully I'm pushing them.
Yeah, and can you believe that you're at the halfway point now and you've sort of got the first half of the season done in the can, and now you've got to look forward now? And I think as well, a lot less pressure maybe than at the start of the season when you had a few difficult games. Obviously you got the win against Chelsea, yeah, and then it went on a difficult run, but now you've sort of climbed up the table. Does that make things a little bit easier?
Yeah, like you said, the first half absolutely flew by, but the win on Sunday is a massive push for us, and like you said, we just can't take our foot off the gas now. It's just performing better each game and just pushing ourselves.
Yeah, and you've got Leicester at the weekend as well. I think a lot of people are looking forward to that. How big a game is that for you guys?
I think every game's a big game, but looking at the result and the performance on Sunday, we've just got to push on from that, and hopefully we get the 3 points again.
Thank you so much for talking to us. Yes, thank you. We've got Missy Bo with us now. Thanks for joining us. Off the back of a really positive weekend, you're at the halfway point of the season now. How do you feel like things have progressed since the start of the season?
I think we're in a great place. It took us a while to settle in the league, but we expected that anyway. We didn't expect to come into the league and be dominating every single game. Where I think on the weekend we showed like we was dominant. We got the result we needed, and that was all that mattered. And we're ready to kick on now for the second half of the season, for the rest of the games.
Has it just been taking it game by game? And what are some of the difficulties in particular that the jump up to the WSL sort of posed to you guys?
Yeah, I think it's game by game. You can't focus on what's in 4 weeks. It's what's this weekend. And I think that's what's helped us a lot. And when results haven't went our way, or we could have got more than we thought, more than we actually got, I think then you can't dwell on it because you've got another game next week, and the opposition you're playing against, you haven't got time to be dwelling, because it'll affect you, because teams now in the WSL it's improving every single year, and every team's improving and it shows.
Yeah, your home games now, you've got the nice main stand full of fans rather than just behind the goal. But how much of a difference does that make to have more people coming week in, week out as well?
I think it shows the way the women's game's going, but I think our fans are brilliant. Not only our home games, but away games, they're always there and you see the same faces coming to every game and you're appreciated and it makes you run that extra mile for them.
Let's talk about your goal against Reading then. What did that feel like, and talk us through how that went?
Yeah, I think like it was a touch and then a slide tackle in a sense, but a goal's a goal. I don't care if it comes off my knee, my shin, my ankle, or I'm on the floor when it goes in. It's the best feeling in the world scoring for Liverpool, and in such a game like that, which was critical to win, the emotions were high.
Yeah, so you've had a few new faces to turn up in January as well. And what's that done to the sort of the mood and the morale? Because obviously it raises the levels. You've got to be a bit more competitive as well. But what are the new players like?
Every player who's come in's raised the game and raised everyone else's standards. And I think they've been good additions. The mood's been great because we know we're going in the right direction. And it's not like, oh, we've got new players in. It's like we've got new players in because we want to compete, and that's where I want Liverpool to be. I can't speak for others, but I'm made up with the signings and I love playing with them.
Yeah, and Fuka as well. She had a good game, didn't she, at the weekend. But Gemma Bonner is someone who you sort of knew from when you were younger at Liverpool. What's it like having her come back? She was a bit of a mentor figure to you, wasn't she?
Yeah, it's great. Me and Gemma were constantly winding each other up and we tell each other how it is, and like I'm buzzing she's back. We go for coffees, we do sessions like together, we spend time with each other outside of football, and I think it's mad because the age gap's massive, but like
she won't like that.
But we just get on so well, and I think you can see with our relationships on the pitch, and like it's mad. I've looked up to her since I was 8. Used to get pictures with her when I was in the academy when she was captain of Liverpool, and now we're playing together and you couldn't write it.
Yeah, it's lovely, isn't it, to be back with her. You've got a huge game coming up again at the weekend. We'll all be there. But is the pressure a little bit off now because you feel like you're a bit further up the table? You're not constantly looking over your shoulder, seeing what teams at the bottom are doing. You feel like you can play with a bit more ease.
Yeah, I wouldn't say the pressure's off because we want to win every game we go into, but it's not as pressurised as it was. I think now it's just focusing on us. If we focus on us, we'll get results, and that's all we need and that's all we're wanting.
Yeah, and this season, obviously, staying up, that was the main aim. And then, are you thinking about next year already, or is it just getting through the season and then seeing what's to come?
We're still focusing on this season. We've got a game this weekend. Like, you can't be thinking, but if we got first game of next season, we've still got games to play and compete for this season. And you never know what can happen. We could go on a run, which we all know we want to win every game we play.
And Leicester the weekend, that's obviously a really big game. But you've got to feel like if you get past this one and get a good result, that's you up on the top of yourself for another season. That's got to have a really good mood around.
Yeah, I think if we win the weekend, we're looking forward. Then it's, as you said before, we're not looking what's behind us, and I think that's all we're focusing on is we just want to go forward all the time.
Great, thank you so much for chatting to us.
No worries, see you later.
NordVPN, John. I suspect it came in handy for a few people last weekend. Sadly so, some might say. Sadly so. Unfortunately, it functioned.
Yeah, it would have been a decent one for everything not to work. But yeah, I'm sure lots of people did use it on Saturday afternoon, whether that is a good thing or not at the moment.
It's somewhat up in the air. It is somewhat up in the air, and yet there you find it. Listen, it's got an app, the NordVPN stuff as well, and you can use it on your phone as well as part of the idea that it obviously helps you from security purposes on top of all the other bits and pieces that you probably guess we're referring to without saying them explicitly, because we do try to be careful occasionally on the Anfield wrap. If you are interested in the Nord stuff, you can grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/wrap to get a huge discount off the plan and the bonus gift. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. So all of that is there on top of all the other bits and pieces. It obviously has the idea that, you know, we've tried it, we've used it. Some would say quite recently, ceased use on Saturday at 4:45 p.m. possibly. Might have got off early, the VPN equivalent of getting off early in a huff, John. Do you think you did that?
No, I watched till the end.
Did you? The bitter end.
Well, I had to do post-match content, so just in case anything happened. Did have to watch at the end. But yeah, I do like the idea of a VPN flounce.
Yeah, a VPN, that'll do. I've seen enough of this as it goes all the way through. So there is the security stuff, as I've mentioned before, and we have mentioned before in there as well. We want to be quite clear about those sorts of little bits and pieces, that is a really, really good thing. There's also NordPass, which is NordPass's password manager, which helps you understand where everything is in one very, very secure place through your use of NordVPN. In addition to that as well, there is all the obvious tech stuff. You can get that sorted out as well. There's diskless servers, which is easy for me to say, which store no data or configurations on site. That is useful in there. You can use a double VPN as well if need be. It is there for any sort of use, including TV, including film, and including being made miserable by the Reds on a Saturday. And welcome back. It is part four of Tour Live. It's seamless if you're on the YouTube and you're enjoying it as live. But if you're not, you've just heard the wonderful Missy Bo-Kearns and Mel Lawley chatting away to Harriet Pryor, which is what all the cool kids do these days. All the cool kids do that. If you want to get free tickets into the game against Leicester coming up, go through the process through the Liverpool website and then put in this code at the very end to have it reduced. It is IWSBBI. You won't believe the amount of time I've tried to turn that into an acronym or, for that matter, an anagram over the course of today. But I have failed miserably. IWSBBI. If you can, I mean, don't do that for me now. It's too late. It's gone. You know, I'm trying to do my own jokes here as we go, and I haven't got a team of script writers working away for me night and day like Dan Morgan's got. I've got to just do it single-handedly and go from there. So if when you go through there, it's IWSBBI, if you want to get some tickets for the women's game up against Leicester, it is a massive game, a massive, massive game. A win there all but secures that Liverpool women will be playing WSL football next season. But almost more importantly, in a sense, it means that the rest of this season can be about planning for next, because it's not about staying up. It's not about survival. It's about Liverpool having the best women's team on the planet, and if that takes 5 years, you've got to start somewhere, and being able to use the next few months in order to be part of that process will be invaluable. It's a massive game Sunday. Hopefully you can get down there. We'll be doing something post-match as well from it. I'm really looking forward to getting myself along, so see you there on Sunday if you're about. IWSBBI in order to get hold of those tickets. Okay then, it's a massive game Monday as well, Dan Morgan. It's a massive game Monday. There's the press conference, there's all the obvious around fitness, there's all the bits and pieces. For me, watching Everton against Arsenal, for me, looking at the numbers of Everton against Arsenal, the heat maps of Everton against Arsenal, it was like, and I mean this to the credit of the man, it was like watching Sean Dyche's Burnley. The point is, Liverpool in the end worked out how to get results against Sean Dyche's Burnley. But the best way to get results against Sean Dyche's Burnley was to be clever. Win your battles and be clever. And what concerns me about Monday night is that this is a Liverpool team that have shown they have the exceptional ability to be stupid in any given moment.
Yeah, especially early on. Yeah, Dyche teams, I mean, remembering back to them now, because we're going to need to, you know, exercise that memory, is that you picked your moments when to go and knew that they would always have a moment as well. And you know, I think Liverpool under Klopp got gradually better at that over the years that he was there. There's the horrible 2-0, isn't there, which is his second game of his first full season.
Yeah, 16-17. It was
16-17.
Horrible.
Yeah.
But it was away. It was away.
It was away, but it was one of the ones where you can, in all the ways we've seen results come in this season, you could see one there and it plays out that day. And you know, he's a manager who's learned from certain experiences, certain teams, certain stadiums, and I think he definitely learned a lot that day in general. But yeah, I mean, they defended in a 4-5-1, attacked in a 4-1-4-1 at times. You know, had the Corey push right up, played for the moments in the game. I thought, to be honest with you, if we're doing a little bit on that game, I thought it's one of the first times. I think it's probably the first time this season that Arteta got something majorly wrong. You see that, if we're talking about moments, you see that 45 to 60 Arsenal are massively on top. And I was just looking at him going, take one of your midfielders off and put Trossard on. They won't be able to deal with four forwards. And that is, in many ways, you know, a way of how you deal with the Dyche team, is that you choose your moments when to get on top when you're on top. And then, you know, maybe you can take him, you can put a midfielder like Jorginho on for one of the forward players. And you play Dyche at his own game in many ways. But there'll be, you know, look, there'll be, I think they'll be relishing the organisation and the professionalism that he'll bring to them. And I think they'll be willing to run for that. I agree with you. We've got to rely on a Liverpool side that doesn't fundamentally undo itself, and especially in the first 10 minutes of a game. And, you know, I think I expect to see something here in terms of what we haven't seen in the past couple of games. I think there's just been a monotony to Brighton and to Wolves whereby you've just thought, this just needs to break. You know, we can do without this again, because you could feel how stale it felt going into those games. But this, I expect a reaction, and I think we'll get one.
Do you think we'll get one, Steve? Are you expecting a reaction? Do you think you will get one? How do you feel this works?
I mean, Christ, we're in trouble if we don't get a reaction to this game. I've been trying to convince myself all week, it's the game we need to get us going, a Merseyside derby. Nowhere to hide, blood and thunder. It's not going to be pretty. It's going to be, you know, survival of the fittest out there. But I think that could be something that might just spur us into gear. As Dan said, I think they're going to come with a game plan. They're going to be organised. They're going to just pick their moments off. And as long as we're, you know, if we get to 20 minutes, not be too down, I'll be delighted. That it's just major improvements on the last couple of games anyway, or certainly Wolves. I actually thought there were some green shoots at Wolves. I saw a few things at Wolves that, you know, barring a star, but I thought going forward and a bit in the second half, I thought we showed some good signs that we maybe just taking steps in the right direction. Yeah, you know, we get beat 3-0, it's a disastrous result, but there were certainly things in that game that I thought were working okay. So I'm expecting to bring a couple of wiser heads, a couple of experienced heads and leaders more than anything back into the side. Certainly see Jordan Henderson back in. Wouldn't surprise me to see James Milner as well somewhere, just so someone who could bring a bit of calm to the madness and who's played these games before. And just make sure we're not giving any gifts away in the first 15 minutes if possible. So I think we can do it. I think it'll be, I said it won't be pretty, but I think we can get a result.
The not be pretty part, Mike, I'm all for. Like, if there was a thing I'd like to have, you know, nailed up at the training ground this week, it's absolutely fine to kick for touch. If in doubt, you know, you can just empty it against these. And one of the reasons why is if they're going to be like a Deitch team anyway, they don't want the ball. So if you get the ball 50 yards away from our goal, they'll give it us back pretty quickly. They don't want the ball. You know, there's points where Deitch teams can play, don't get me wrong, and they play in a really compact and smart way. But ultimately, you know, Liverpool playing no risk football here, I think will at some point find their way through, and then suddenly the football match will become easier for them. But they've got to get through those periods where they will come under genuine sort of threat, whether it's from set pieces or something else.
No, 100%. And I think it goes back to your point of just not being stupid and not being naive. And I think Sean Dyche, more than any other manager, is a manager that's really helped Jurgen Klopp in terms of the question he's posed the manager in some of those games early on. I think the Burnley game you cite and Dan cite was a big one, that the 2-0 loss, where I think Andre Gray scores a goal. I can't remember who scores the other one, but it was a real low, I think, early on in Jurgen Klopp's time at the club. And since then, we've managed to cope well against Burnley, and we have coped well against low blocks. In the period where we get 90 points back-to-back, we beat the teams that we should beat, and we beat them quite convincingly as well. So I just think, don't do anything stupid. We know that they want set pieces. We know that they want to break the game up. We know they want it to be bitty. Don't play into their hands, you know, be sensible. And it doesn't have to be a beautiful performance. It can be a game where we have to suffer a bit. We have to be patient as fans as well. We have to be patient and trust that they will break Everton down. But it's not going to be a 4-0. I mean, I hope it is, but I don't think it will be a 4-0 where, you know, Rigi scores and everyone's having the time of their lives. It's going to be a Monday night slog. And I'm all for it. I don't think that one thing I would say about this group of players is they haven't let us down in the big games this season. I mean, we can talk about them against the Brightons and Wolves, but in some of the bigger games, I've actually been okay with the performances. Man City was obviously a notable performance. The Arsenal one at 2-2, they're really poor, but before that, it's an okay performance. They do stupid things in that game as well, but it's an okay performance.
They do stupid things in that game, Mike.
They can't help themselves, can they? But like the big games, we've risen to the occasion. I don't see why Monday will be any different. I do feel confident that, especially when the manager spoke about them looking really aggressive and intense in training and training well, that's a good sign. And I just think that it's a Monday night under the lights. I don't see why we can't use this game as a springboard. And I've said that a few times this season, but why we can't use this game, a grid win, as a springboard for a strong finish to the season.
Mike, presuming you've got no Van Dijk, who are you picking a centre off?
I'm really reluctant to go Matip and Gomez again. I don't think they help each other at times, those two. I actually think Gomez and Phillips works better because it means Gomez assumes the role of a leader, and he's done well in the past as that leader for us in defence. I remember an FA Cup game where he plays alongside Phillips, if I remember correctly, and Curtis Jones scores a goal. And Gomez did well as the leader of the defensive line that day, and I don't see why he can't do the same on Monday.
Dan, who are you picking at centre-half?
I've said all week, I think if he can get Van Dijk on the pitch, it'd not be a kamikaze job in terms of risking him for the next few weeks. I think he'll try. And he's very risk-averse in these circumstances, but I think I wouldn't rule him out until you get the team sheet, Virgil, to be honest. But I wouldn't be going near that Phillips. He's nowhere near it. Sorry.
Okay. Steve, you doing a centre-half?
Yeah, I'm a Dan. I've been praying all week that the picture of Van Dijk training, it just doesn't come in a bit too soon for him, but it sounds like it might do from the manager today. I'm hoping it opens a little bit of mind games from the manager. It'd be great if it is, because he'll make a massive difference. But if not, I'm with Dan. I don't think he brings Nat Phillips in. I think it's almost hanging him out to dry a little bit if it doesn't go well. So I don't think he will.
We've got to stop this as well. We've got to stop having players, professional fit players, who play in those positions and putting other players like 18-year-old kids, or talking about putting centre midfielders and centre-halves when we've got players there who are in those positions. The players who've been to European Cup finals for Liverpool, the players who've won trophies, you know, we can't start saying all of a sudden that, you know, Fabinho can no longer play in a Liverpool side at the expense of Stefan Bajicic or Joel Matip. Can't be in a Liverpool 11 because, you know, we need a midfielder there instead in terms of talking about competence. We've got to get out of this. This, you know, you've got who you've got, and you've got players who've won a lot of things, and they've got to front up. Mm. They've got to get themselves on the pitch and front up, and Matip especially after last week.
Okay. Dan, are you doing in the midfield?
I wouldn't be averse at all to seeing Curtis Jones play. I've said this for a while. I think if Thiago's out, I think for me, I know you're going to go round here, Neil, but I think the most important position on the pitch for us is nine, because I think we've got to make Idrissa Gueye look crap, because Idrissa Gueye is crap. And I think you can really isolate him. I don't think Onana's that much of a threat unless he can get it to Iwobi. But I think I'd be doing Jones, maybe Henderson in six, and then I'd be sound with Milner on the right, to be honest.
Mike, who are you doing?
I would go Henderson, Jones and Keita. I think we need players that are competent on the ball and are patient and press resistant at times as well, because there will be times when I think Dyche sides do pick their moments, but they do press sometimes, and there will be a plan to press us in particular zones. And I trust Keita and Jones more than any of our midfielders. And I think we do need to get Henderson on the pitch. To go back to your do stupid things point, I think Badrić would be a bad choice on a Monday night under the lights in his first derby, because he will probably do something stupid because he's an 18-year-old kid and he's done well for us. But I don't think it'll be the best environment to push him into on a Monday. So I'll go for Henderson, the experience of Henderson, and the kind of quality on the ball of Jones and Keita.
Okay, Steve, what are you doing?
I think he brings Fabinho back in myself. I think he brings Fabinho back in with Henderson. And that's if he's fit. I didn't know you mentioned it in the press conference today.
No. Nope.
But I think, you know, he hasn't been great. We know he hasn't been great, but he's not the only one. And as Dan said, he's not going to get any better by sitting on the bench. But what I don't want to see is Fabinho coming on late in the game, because we know, as what we've seen so far, that's suicidal. So I think he brings Fabinho and Henderson and Waller Jones or Keita on the other side.
Okay. And Dan, who do you want to pick at number nine? What are you looking to do there? You seem very number nine focused.
I was, and again, you know, just on the Virgil point, I think if he could get Firmino especially on the pitch, he would. I don't think he'd take that chance with Jota from the start, given what happens against City. But yeah, I'd probably go same again. I'd be tempted to switch Nunes and Gakpo. But yeah, go the same personnel.
Same personnel. Mike, what are you doing up top?
I would actually have Gakpo number nine, and I feel sorry for him because we moved him about a few times. But it was weird he started on the left against Wolves, given he had his best game for us against Brighton as the number nine. Like, he did some of the stuff that I would have wanted him to do in terms of receiving the ball in a half turn, shifting players, driving with the ball. And I just think those are the sorts of things we might need. Just kind of his dropping and coming to feet and him releasing Darwin and Salah in behind. I think that would be quite useful for us against Everton. And I just think Cody feels the most comfortable there for us at the moment. So why not play him in a position where he's kind of showing some promise?
State.
Yeah, the same front three for me. I'm the same. I'd like to see. I think Gakpo's looked certainly the best game he had for us so far was at Brighton away. I think he showed some real promise there. So and that was through the middle. So I'd like to see him through the middle and Nunes on the left and Salah on the right.
Okay. Anyone else do anything wild? Any Milner right back instincts or chat? I wouldn't. I'd be picking Trent all day. No, yeah. Shakes of heads. All relatively sensible stuff across the board. But it wouldn't surprise me to see James Milner find his way into the first 11 for this one. Okay, then. Thank you very much indeed. I'm not going to ask you for a prediction because who needs it? Who needs the stress? Do you know what I mean? Why isn't it tonight? You know, they have some of these games on a Friday night. At least then it'd be out the way and your weekend would be the weekend. As it is, Monday night, good God. But, you know.
Days are not looking at them. Once another weekend, they're not looking at Costas Simikas.
It's understandable for everyone concerned not to have to look at them, but we will look at them on Friday and on Monday, and hopefully they will not let the side down. It is an absolutely massive Merseyside derby. Download the Anfield Wrap app for more build up. Check out theanfieldwrap.com /TAW live, not for this show, but for tickets to our North American little shindigs that we've got going on. It is quite the weekend in store, quite the Monday night in store. Merseyside derbies at Anfield. Liverpool have got no option. They've got to do the business at all costs. Thanks to Mike, thanks to Dan, thanks to Steve. See you later. Sports Social Podcast Network.